Hello everyone, this is Viviana Young, the Environmental Education and Outreach Coordinator for Umpqua Watersheds through United Communities AmeriCorps, and the host of Living Downstream. Umpqua Watersheds values both human and ecological diversity. We celebrate the strengths and perspectives that different people have to offer and believe that organizations, communities, and ecosystems are all more resilient when they embrace the unique gifts various individuals can contribute. We acknowledge that the land upon which Umpqua Watersheds is located was formerly occupied and tended by various indigenous groups, including Cow Creek Umpqua, Coquille, Molalla, and others. Their history is intertwined with this place, and we seek to continue to practice stewardship and reciprocity towards the natural environment, which indigenous people did for thousands of years prior to European settlement. So today we have with us Mark Linehan, the president of PFLAG. Hello, Mark.
Glad to be here.
Can you start by telling us a little bit about PFLAG, like what it is?
Sure. PFLAG is one of the oldest and largest LGBTQ support groups in the country. It was started in the early 1970s by a lady named Jean Mansford, very soon after the Stonewall incidents began. Basically, it was started when Jean took her son to kind of the precursor of the modern day Pride Parade, and was approached by several of his friends to come and talk to their parents, their family members, their friends, and really to really talk to them just about how important, you know, support is for the LGBTQ community. And so she was really surprised at the lack of support that she found for the community. So she basically started, along with a few other like-minded people, started a support group that met in the basement of a local church there. And it basically snowballed from there and became what's known as PFLAG today. It stands for Parents, Friends, and Families of Lesbians and Gays, and was later just shortened to the easier acronym PFLAG. As far as PFLAG Roseburg, we've been here. We're coming up on our third anniversary this spring. We kind of started out of a group that my wife and I were running, which was a community activism group called Common Ground Coalition. And my wife wanted to get more involved in, you know, local activism and that type of thing. And we really kind of, we got together and held a meeting with, once again, with some other like-minded people. And we really wanted to sit down and focus on three or four main things that we really wanted to emphasize in our activism. We held a meeting and we kind of were brainstorming with other people about, you know, what we wanted to do, you know, and topics like homelessness, environmentalism, getting money out of politics, you know, local politics, that type of thing were brought up. And I brought up the fact that I wanted to get involved with LGBTQ issues and was really kind of surprised when had a gentleman that we were talking to turn to me and go, well, there's an LGBTQ support group in Reedsport. Well, that's great for the people in Reedsport and in that area, but, you know, Reedsport's an hour, hour and a half away. What about the people here in Roseburg, Sutherland, Oakland, Myrtle Creek, you know, Douglas County? My wife and I started getting more involved in LGBTQ support activities and organized the very first LGBTQ Pride rally that we held in Stewart Park about 5 years ago now. We had a local speaker come and had, you know, a sign rally on Stewart Parkway. And during that meeting, we held kind of an open mic time and let people come and share, you know, what they wanted to share. And we were really surprised at the number of especially young people. And when I say young people, I'm talking high school age and a little bit older, come up and share just heartbreaking stories of their feelings of isolation and fear and lack of support. And it just really, like I said, it broke our hearts and it really solidified the fact that we needed to get something that was really more concrete, organized. And a mutual friend of my wife and mine mentioned that he was familiar with PFLAG and I'd not heard of PFLAG before, and got online and did a little bit of research, was very, very impressed with their mission statement, their integrity, the fact that except for a very small handful of people in the PFLAG national offices, everything is run by volunteers. You know, with a lot of charities, you hear, you know, such high percentages of donations going towards the actual running of the business rather than actually being used for support activities. And so I was very, very pleased and very surprised to find that that's not the case with PFLAG National. And so got involved with getting a PFLAG started here.
Amazing. So you mentioned that there was actually a larger young community than you were originally expecting of LGBTQ mm-hmm. people. Mm-hmm. I know that a lot of such young people, especially high schoolers specifically, may not find acceptance in their own homes. Do you have any advice for anyone who might be suffering that sort of experience and how they might be able to reach out to connect with the larger community, or how they might find a mentor or anything like that, without stirring up conflict in their home environment?
Right, right. And absolutely, they can always reach out to PFLAG. I am available to come and talk with them, with their family if they want. You know, a lot of times when you're dealing with a lack of support, it's because for one reason or another, the individual just does not feel comfortable with coming out to their family. And a lot of times it's just a fear of being misunderstood. And, you know, yeah, you do run into the instances where they know that the parents are just not going to be supportive, period, end of story, whether it's, you know, personal beliefs, religious beliefs, whatever. But a lot of times it's just a fear of, I don't think my parents understand what I'm saying. I don't think my parents understand what this means. And they're needing help to just come and have a shoulder to lean on while they're explaining to their parents exactly what's going on, exactly how, what it is they're going through and how they're feeling. Reaching out to groups like the HIV Alliance. You know, I mentioned the spiritual aspect of it. A lot of times there's a LGBTQ friendly church people attend, or, you know, just going to somebody in that community and saying, hey, will you come with me while I talk to my parents, or, you know, whatever. And it's just a matter of, like I said, just finding that shoulder to be that extra support and to be there just in case their ultimate fear is realized and their parents absolutely reject them. And I've had that happen. So, you know, unfortunately it does happen, but it's really, really, really small.
Right.
And a lot of times it's just a matter of the parents going, you know, hey, we don't really understand, but there's resources that we can give the parents to help them understand, whether it's written material, whether it's sitting down one-on-one, whatever.
Right. And these parents, like you said, I think a lot of them just don't understand and haven't been educated on the identities that their child may have. Mm-hmm. So one of the three main things that PFLAG offers, to my understanding, is to provide education and resources. And I think that these parents, even if they themselves aren't LGBT people, mm-hmm. can really benefit from this education that PFLAG provides. Mm-hmm. Could you cover the three main right. services yeah. that PFLAG offers?
Right. The three main things that PFLAG does is support and celebration of the LGBTQ community. We do that with events like Pride that's coming up this summer, different social events, that type of thing. The main thing that we do is education. As we talked about, you know, just being there to be providing, you know, written material, just a conversation one-on-one, support meetings. You know, unfortunately, you know, the past couple of years, COVID has really kind of put the kibosh on our being able to do in-person support meetings and that type of thing. You know, but we're looking at doing that again. You know, we held monthly support meetings where we had different speakers come in and speak on different topics, whether it was, you know your legal rights, different mental health issues, physical health issues, PrEP, you know, that type of thing. We've had, you know, support meetings on, you know, what does LGBTQ in the faith community, what does the Bible actually really say about homosexuality and a same-sex relationship and that type of thing. And then we do intervention activities where we hold sign rallies, go to, you know, public meetings, city council meetings, county commissioner meetings, you know, government meetings, that type of thing, where we address issues that the LGBTQ community has.
Right. So all three of those things are, of course, very important aspects to serving the community, especially the LGBT community. What would you say is the biggest need in the community that PFLAG supports?
Really, I wouldn't say that there's one specific big item. It really varies from person to person. You know, a lot of times it's just a matter of being there as, you know, as a parent myself of LGBTQ children who was not too long ago in a very right-wing mindset of my beliefs concerning the LGBTQ community, and really having to deal with my own stereotypes and prejudices and wrong beliefs, and come to terms with the damage that I did personally to the LGBTQ community while I was of that mindset, and being there to say, okay, you don't have to travel this alone. See, people don't understand the power of just having one supportive person in an LGBTQ individual's life.
Support really does make a world of difference. A lot of people seem really to forget that, how much connection, human connection, is part of everyone's experience, and how impactful it can be just to have anyone to talk to, whether that be a friend or a family member or a mentor, anyone really. And so, circling back a little bit, when you were talking about providing education, you mentioned that there is legislation out there that protects these individuals that some people don't even know about. I can think of at least Title IX at colleges that protect people against discrimination, really. Can you think of other examples of laws or rules or anything like that that people don't commonly know about that do protect these individuals?
Laws, no. You mentioned Title IX. That's a big, you know, but there are the Equality Act is in the Supreme Court right now.
Right.
There has been rulings by the Supreme Court in a couple different discrimination cases where people were fired because of their sexual identity, because they were transgender.
Right.
That they've ruled that, no, you can't do that. But there are some really big fights going on right now. Unfortunately, you know, that's the big thing I really run into a lot with the work, is people that will sit there and go, well, why do we need to be so concerned about fighting for LGBTQ rights? They've gotten the right to marry. And I'm sorry, if you think that the right for same-sex couple to marry is the only discrimination that they are facing, you are sadly mistaken. You're looking at the previous presidential administration and what he did to the transgender troops. You look at the healthcare issues where people are being told that it's okay to refuse medical treatment to LGBTQ individuals because you don't agree with their lifestyle. And the list just goes on and on and on and on and on.
Right. And so the way that we can make change is activism. And PFLAG and members of the LGBT community in general are major activists, as far as I've seen. Could you talk a little bit about the importance of activism and making sure people are responsible for their words and actions and that sort of thing?
I can give a perfect example. We ran into a situation this last summer with a city councilman who made some extreme transphobic remarks during the preparation time for a city council meeting that was on Zoom. And instead of apologizing and saying, you know, yeah, I shouldn't have said that, he basically doubled down and compared transgender individuals to animals. He said that the transgender issue was a joke, basically the same old, you know, there's only two genders and it's very easy to tell the difference. You just pull their pants down.
Oof.
Yeah. And so several members of PFLAG went into a city council meeting in person and spoke to the city council. And we were actually in contact with one of the city council members who is very LGBTQ friendly. And we tried to get this person removed from his post. We were actually wanting to get him removed from the city council. We were not successful in that. We did get an official censure of him from the city council, which basically means that the city council said, well, we don't necessarily agree with what he said. But unfortunately, the word was out there, the damage was done, and in our mind, they really didn't do anything to rectify the situation. Activism is very, very, very important. We can't sit and be an armchair activist. I can't sit in my easy chair here in front of my computer and get on Facebook and go, oh, well, that's just terrible. This is just awful. You know, granted, yes, armchair activism is great when it comes down to letters to the editor, contacting your legislation and that type of thing. But that's not all there is to it. You have to get out on the street. You have to get face to face with the monster and fight it.
Right. And activists kind of function as the voice of the group that they represent. Mm-hmm. So I know that there are a lot of LGBT members in the community that some people might not even know about. Our neighbors, our friends.
I don't know an exact number.
Right.
But I can easily guesstimate Douglas County has a 15% LGBTQ population.
And they're drastically underrepresented. Mm-hmm. Isn't that right?
Yeah, they're drastically underrepresented. And that's just it. The thing of it is that we are such a conservative area that the mindset is that, there really can't be that much of an LGBTQ population. But there really is. And it's under the surface. And because, I'll be honest, homophobia in Douglas County is not so much an in-your-face, rawr, here we are thing. It's very, very subversive. It's very hidden. It's very, very much
almost sort of like whispered and implied.
Yes, yes, yes. I mean, things like, I work at a hotel as a desk clerk, and I've had guests that I know are LGBTQ from out of the area come in to get a room at the hotel that I work at. And they've asked me for recommendations on a restaurant to go to. And, you know, I will say a restaurant and they'll say, well, my taxi driver recommended so-and-so restaurant. And I know from dealings with that restaurant that were that LGBTQ individual to go into that particular restaurant, they would be immediately discriminated against, ostracized, put down, practically run out of the building. I mentioned that, you know, I've not always been an LGBTQ supporter, you know, and my transition, if you will, into LGBTQ support is very involved. One of the major things that I witnessed while I was in my questioning period, my researching period, was I had a coworker who was in the closet that was outed by someone else at work. And this coworker, who up until this point was considered an exemplary employee, had no bad reports, had no write-ups. All of a sudden, this individual was outed, was made the brunt of extremely homophobic jokes by other coworkers, and was basically given a choice to resign their position or they would be fired. And they were made to resign their position due to unsatisfactory work practices.
That just goes to show that these implied or joked about or stealthy, almost, I guess, acts of homophobia, they create a negative atmosphere. Even if you don't think that they're making a direct impact, this negative atmosphere does make change in a bad way. Would you agree?
Absolutely. You know, like I said, I've got children who are part of the LGBTQ community that have left Douglas County because of the underlying homophobia and the underlying hidden discrimination, persecution, and that type of thing. And they will not come back and live in Douglas County because they don't want to have any part of that. They'll come and visit, you know, but they will not have any part of Douglas County as far as a place to live.
It is good to hear that there are people like you who can change, who can educate themselves and open their mind and become an advocate. It goes to show that, like, it's never too late. Even if someone feels like, oh, they've dug themselves too deep in the homophobia or by making friends who they might not actually agree with, it's never too late to start advocating for diversity.
Never too late. I don't care if... My friend on the city council is a perfect example. He's been well known for his conservative views in the past and has, you know, been recently just been coming to grips with a lot of his own ideas and how he was wrong, how he was more concerned with, you know, how his conservative friends saw him, his place in the community, and that type of thing, and has finally decided that none of that matters. He needs to do the right thing. And it doesn't matter where you've come from. I constantly wrestle with the fact that 20 years ago, I would have been one of the guys there standing there holding the sign that says, God hates you-know-whats, and you-know-whats are going you-know-where, and all that. And I look back at that and people that I deal with now that knew me back then will bring that up every once in a while. And I'll just say, yeah, that's right. That was me. That's not me anymore. I've changed. I've educated myself. I've been able to come to grips with the fact. And that's the hardest thing to admit for the human being to admit is that I was wrong.
Right. And I think that it's not entirely your fault, even necessarily, that when you were younger, you had these views, because like you said, there is such a hidden homophobia in our community and some other communities that you grow up with. You get it from your own parents, the people you go to school with, the people you go to church with, and it can kind of seep into you without you even noticing. And you have to take that step once you're an adult to do the research, to open your mind and to decide, is this just a knee-jerk reaction that's been programmed into me? Or is this actually how I feel about something? Because there is an impact on the young people. Some people who are even LGBT themselves do get this impact from learning this from everyone else around them, that actually might keep people in the closet, or it might make them anti members of their own group. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I really do know what you mean. And it takes a very big individual to, like I said, be willing to say, maybe I don't know everything, and be willing to hunker down and find out exactly, okay, this is what I think, this is how I feel. Is this really the truth? You know, is this really what's going on? And if it is, okay, great. If it's not, say, okay, what do I do about it? And be willing to carry out that process and say, what am I going to do about this?
So on a bit of a lighter note, I do know that the Pride Parade is coming up this summer.
Yep.
Could you speak a little bit about maybe the vendors, the information, live music? I think you said that there was going to be live music and just general information.
Yeah, we've started working on the Pride Parade this year. It's going to be June 4th. And we've already had several vendors contact us in wanting to be able to set up booths. We've got some mixed media vendors, some knitting and crocheting, and I'm going to look at having some live music there. You know, a lot of this is still, like I said, we've just started. So a lot of it is very much still in limbo. We're going to meet in front of the Douglas County Courthouse in the lawn area there at 11 o'clock. We're going to have some informational tabling booths, vendors. We've had some food vendors reach out to us that want to be there. And then at 1 o'clock, we'll do the actual parade itself, walk through downtown Roseburg, head down Jackson, down to Lane, head up Lane, and then return to the Douglas County Courthouse lawn. The parade is open to marching groups. We're going to open it to people that want to do floats. We will have some guidelines that we will have them actually sign an acknowledgement of. First and foremost, we want to make sure it's family friendly. You were not going to be any kind of reverse hate speech allowed. And by reverse hate speech, I mean, you know, things like Christianity sucks or anything like that. You know, no political campaigning. If a candidate wants to have a float just to show they're LGBTQ friendly, that's great. But we're not going to do vote for so-and-so type situation. Artists, as far as performers, are more than welcome if they want to come in, you know, and character and march in the parade. We're open. As long as it's family friendly, as long as it's LGBTQ supportive, it's not reverse hate speech, we're good.
So is this event something that Roseburg has done previously? Is this an annual thing? Is this a first time thing?
We've done one before, and I was very, very pleased with the support. We had about 1,000 people show up for the Pride Parade 2 years ago. We were going to do one again last year, but unfortunately, COVID kind of nipped that in the bud. And so we're looking to try it again this year.
You mentioned that there will be some food vendors. Do you know if there will be different dietary accommodations, such as vegan food, perhaps, or gluten-free or anything like that?
We are absolutely going to contact vegan vendors, gluten-free vendors, to see, you know, about making sure that everybody's dietary needs are met.
Well, that's great. And I think I will probably attend this year. So I can't wait for it.
Good.
It's good to be able to talk about it on the radio because some people don't even know about it. I didn't know about it until just this year.
Well, and that's what absolutely shocked the pants off of me with the last one is that how many messages after the fact I heard of people going, I didn't even know this was going to happen. And we advertised the boogers out of it. And so we're definitely going to hit it again. And with more advertisement, more.
Is there anywhere to RSVP or should people just show up whenever they can?
We do have a website, a PFLAG website, that people can just Google PFLAG Roseburg and it'll pull it right up. We'll have more information as soon as we get a little bit more solidified on the parade. There will be a form that they can fill out. We want to register a float or a marching group and at the same time do the acknowledgement of the conditions that we set up. If somebody's just wanting to walk in the parade and show their support, just show up.
Sounds great. Are there going to be any sort of restrictions like a mask requirement or social distancing encouraged or anything like that?
As of right now, we are definitely going to look at masks being highly, highly recommended, vaccination, highly, highly recommended. I really, you know, as things progress and we get closer and closer and closer, obviously we're going to have to see what the COVID numbers do. But as of right now, yes, we are absolutely going to recommend masks, vaccinations, social distancing, that type of thing. Yes. We'll have hand sanitizer. We'll have masks there. You know, people's safety is our number one priority. It's great to be able to come together and celebrate the LGBTQ community. But if you're doing that at the cost of people's safety, it's not worth it.
Right. So you mentioned your Facebook page, the website. Mm-hmm. You also have an email and a phone number. Would you like mm-hmm. to offer those to listeners?
Absolutely. My email is pflagrsbg@gmail.com. My phone number is 541-423-7370. I'm on Messenger. I am very, very, very careful to try and get back to anybody as quickly as possible.
Great. So thank you so much for appearing on this show, Mark.
It's absolutely been my pleasure.
And it's been a delight having you as well. Is there anything else you'd like to say before we finish up?
I just, you know, if someone's out there and they're struggling with questions or they're struggling with coming out, I just want them to know I'm here. We're here. We're here to help. We love you. We support you. And we're here.
Thank you. And now for some brief announcements. If you love to read and would like to discuss environmental topics with fellow bookworms, try Turning Over a New Leaf Book Club. Turning Over a New Leaf Book Club meets over Zoom every other month and will next meet on Saturday, March 26th. The book to be discussed will be Waste, One Woman's Fight Against America's Dirty Secret by Catherine Coleman Flowers. All sessions take place virtually at 5 p.m. on their date. For more information, please email Umpqua Watershed's Director of Education and Outreach, Ryan Kincaid. Her email is ryan@umpquawatersheds.org. Or, if you'd like to share your environmental knowledge with the community by being interviewed for an episode of Living Downstream, email me at viviana@umpquawatersheds.org. That's viviana@umpquawatersheds.org. And now a discussion with our two guests who will be vendors at the Pride Parade this summer. Danielle Winnay and Jamie Osborne are co-owners of a small art business called Passion Drawn and Ink. Could you guys begin by telling us a little bit about your stall at the Pride Parade and your business in general?
Yeah, I'd love to. This is Danielle, Danielle Winnay. I am co-owner, CEO of Passion Drawn and Ink. So we will be stationed on the Roseburg Courthouse lawn among the rest of the booths for the PFLAG Artist Alley, which features LGBTQ plus members as well as BIPOC representatives. As for our business in general, we can be found on all matter of social media, such as Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, YouTube, and Twitch under Passion Drawn and Ink, as well as our website, www.passiondrawnandink.com. There you'll be able to find our portfolios, adventure boxes with exclusive art and merchandise in there, our commission info, and products such as stickers, prints, and bookmarks. We specialize in LGBTQ+, BIPOC, and body positive illustration, as well as like little nature tidbits and animals and such. Oh, and mostly high fantasy.
And then I am Jamie Osborne, also co-owner of Passion Drawn Ink. So amongst some of the other examples we have for our art is we have a small collection of mushroom ladies that we've created. So they're plus size ladies who are depicted as mushrooms, as well as other traditional arts of wildlife, such as like hummingbirds, deer, whitetail, and such. And so we definitely are super supportive of representing wildlife, environment, as well as our local diversities of people.
It's also like an ever expanding collection as well.
Absolutely.
Wonderful. And how do you feel that art connects to activism?
Well, I believe that art is activism. It has been a major factor in political and environmental movements. It is the basis for all of the media we consume, conveying ideas and inspiration across cultural and linguistic barriers. In that sense, even the smallest image has a huge impact on how we express, identify, and progress our society.
I absolutely agree. I think it can also be a good tool for like spreading positivity, such as like illustrating the beauty of nature, or negativity, such as like historical propaganda. But most people choose art to speak their minds and such. So we typically use it to do positivity progression of making sure people are feeling accepted and loved, as well as bringing attention to more of our nature aspects.
Yeah. When it comes to art relating to LGBTQ+ and BIPOC, body positivity, and everything else that makes us different, representation, I believe, is paramount to see aspects of ourselves within it, because it normalizes the marginalized in our society, whether that be simply a wash of pride colors or an image of a fist or even a red hand. It can be as subtle as a landscape that was painted with the colors that represent your people or sexuality, or as prominent as two women holding hands or an Indigenous person standing strong in the face of boarding schools or empty shoes.
For sure. I think that these are symbols which are fundamental to normalize the aspects of ourselves which have been traditionally marginalized. Art not only brings such things to the forefront of society, but it begins a discourse where there very often wouldn't have been one to begin with. In general, if I seek to understand as an ally the plight of those who have been experiencing racism or homophobia, or even just discrimination about their body, art is an excellent way for me to begin my journey of that understanding. It allows me to see and really experience those emotions that aren't easily portrayed verbally. Art is provocative and jarring at times, and not always the nicest to see for the first time in the sense of experiencing something that you don't normally want to experience. Yeah. But it must fly in the face of traditionalism, mm-hmm. that the foundation of it is invoking feeling, conveying a message, and telling a story a lot of times. Sometimes, as I mentioned earlier, it is ugly, and sometimes it is beautiful. But if we are to like create equity, we must absolutely utilize it as such. The tool of activism, which is why a lot of times Passion and Drawn Ink is what we do. That's why we create art.
Yeah.
I agree completely. Like you said, art is activism, and I really appreciate what you guys do. You spread positivity and acceptance throughout our community, and booths like yours at the Pride Parade are integral to reaching people who might otherwise not have access to your skills and what you have to offer. Speaking of the parade, how did you learn about the Pride Parade? How did you get involved with PFLAG?
Well, first of all, I want to thank you. Oh my gosh, that means so much to me. That really means a lot. That's kind of been the goal of our entire business and what we seek to establish through it. Anyway, we heard about the Pride Festival going on over the years, aside from the last, through social media or our peers. We got involved when we were a vendor at the most recent Christmas craft fair. And the founder of PFLAG approached our booth and invited us to attend the festival after seeing some of our stickers and prints. We excitedly agreed, of course, and continued to keep contact with them as they started to plan the next upcoming event. And they just announced it, and we're super, super thrilled to be on board with them and to encourage that in our community.
Have you attended the Pride Parade before?
This will actually be the first time that both of us have attended, although we've had like friends and family members attend in the past. My personal background environment wasn't the most supportive or involved in the community. So as I've kind of grown and discovered more of who I am and stepped more into my role of my independence, I definitely progressed past those barriers. I found myself wanting to be more involved in my community events. So I can confidently say that we're definitely excited to join in the celebration of uniqueness of our community holds this year. And so this will be a nice first time and of many to come, I think.
Yeah. I would also like to add for me personally that I've known a lot of people who came from environments where it wasn't safe for them to exist or express who they really are. In light of that, it is my great honor to help our community pursue diverse expressions and to create a safe environment for all people. One of the great travesties of our time, I believe, is that we are so advanced and yet we're still so stunted by the hate and bigotry surrounding our marginalized people.
For sure. I think one of the ways we can like overcome that is through not only like our art and definitely us being able to be free and display that to our will and to let other people experience it, but
yeah.
Unifying in our shared respect for like our local woodlands and waterways and getting involved together via research and volunteering.
I'm glad that you brought up the uniqueness of our community. Our community is a lot more varied and interesting than people often realize. Do you feel that the diversity in the community is adequately represented?
Well, not fully, I would admit, but I do think it's getting better. Mm-hmm. We see a lot more of diversity being accepted in our social media nationwide, especially as time progresses more and more. Yeah. But locally, I do think we are quite old-fashioned. And then I think that because of it, it's a little bit harder to push that progression with like visual diversity.
Yeah.
But even in our more reserved community, there's still a lot of hidden progression in that diversity. So although it's hidden, I would like to see more visual representation. So there's always room for improvement in my mind.
Like an outward depiction of that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So in what ways do you think we can improve representation?
First, I think it's important that we recognize that while we speak of representation and diversity in art, we should also be intentional about accurately portraying cultures without appropriation. And this is super important, especially as we or whoever you are that is seeking to incorporate more diversity into what you create and then into what you do. It is important that you focus on that as you are a member that is outside that minority. It's important to learn how to edify skin color and cultures. Some master studies you can do if you're a sculptor or an artist and you're interested in growing your skills is Jose Tapiro Barro and Thomas Blackshear. Both have really amazing renders of African-American, Latinx, and indigenous skin tones, as well as depictions of all of them in equity and edification of their ethnicities. Doing those in addition to asking BIPOC members questions about your concerns will help a lot. It can be rather embarrassing, of course, to have those questions and to ask those questions, but it is super important to get a firsthand understanding of such things. And when you ask them, most often than not, they're very much willing to talk about it because it is important. And it's, you know, most are willing to help you learn how not to appropriate their culture and to appreciate it.
So one of the good ways to really kind of improve representation is kind of asking questions to those you want to represent. Mm-hmm. It's a good start. As for more what we can improve upon, I think definitely when it comes to diverse representation, I feel like getting involved with the PFLAG and UMCO Watersheds is a great starting point as mm-hmm. well. So UMCO Watersheds provides, like what I've seen, an excellent common ground between those from all sides because they are focused on our local woodlands and wildlife, as well as that representation that we definitely seek to see more in our community. They're very encouraging of diversity and establishing a safe space for everyone to be able to get involved in a good cause without that discrimination that we may mm-hmm. fear a lot of times. They also welcome an environmental scientist, authors, and more from all different backgrounds that share their knowledge with the community. So I'm glad that we have an honor to definitely work with UMCO Watersheds today. Absolutely. With bringing this together.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Absolutely. So, and the PFLAG has been amazing in beginning the journey for our city to have open that LGBTQ expression.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of what drives improvement in representation would be the willingness to be uncomfortable, to allow yourself to be in spaces and to be around people that you wouldn't necessarily normally fraternize with, who you don't typically run with in your groups, people from different walks of life and different perspectives from your own, as well as lifestyles from your own and ethnicities. It's easy to stay the same when you're comfortable, but comfort comes at the cost of our environment and safety for certain communities. In order to improve our representation, we need to establish an equal and equitable platform for that expression. This isn't to throw like any of those things in one's face or this, that, and the other, or even the consequence of your inaction. But instead, the goal is to give just as much representation for marginalized topics as we do for that which we are comfortable. So if you're consuming one side of media, it's important that you start consuming the other side of media in order to learn about that, not just take it for granted that the side that you're listening to or consuming is 100% right all the time.
For sure. So like we begin to have empathy and emotion towards those things that we haven't had contact with in a while, whether that be like BIPOC, LGBTQ, and or our own impact on our local forests and waterways. So again, that we would be creating more of a platform for others, allowing ourselves to be more uncomfortable with what is presented. And I would go as far as to say, question ourselves as to why we feel uncomfortable mm-hmm. with the situation or what is being presented. Are we like applying a moral reason to what is presented? Are we feeling guilty about our inaction? Is there an injustice? And what is our reasoning for being so upset over it? Mm-hmm. Of course, answering those questions allows ourselves to then find reason and take action into what is needing to have that change.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to take energy and it takes work getting outside of your comfort zone, because it is uncomfortable to be faced with the fact that you maybe haven't pursued enough. You maybe haven't been recycling well enough. You maybe haven't been including LGBTQ, or maybe the way you were raised has put kind of a blockage up to your understanding and inclusion of minorities. And that's uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable to admit that you might have prejudices against a particular type of person, or might not have done as much research as you should have regarding pollution and where our trash is ending up and how that is affecting our ecosystems.
For sure. But taking the time to sit down and actually think about those things is a great step towards actually correcting that behavior.
Mm-hmm. I think another thing too is like beginning that discourse with other people. So as you're like researching and as you're learning and as you're getting involved, being honest with other people who might not have any interest in that. Once you start that conversation, they might have been curious about it themselves or been needing a little bit of a push to get involved in their own journey as well. And it just takes listening to your friend who's like, I just got involved with this and I had no clue. And maybe you didn't have a clue, but this is super important that we get on board with this. And this creates an even broader community and understanding between all of us.
So first of all, thank you so much for your support of Umpqua Watersheds. It's great to hear that our organization has left such a positive impression on you. And we do hope to at least be one of the platforms in which we can bring people together. So moving on, what are your thoughts on volunteerism and activism? What kind of volunteerism have you personally been involved with?
Well, I think that volunteerism and activism is very important. It allows for everyone who is concerned about something involving their community to voice that concern and take the action needed. Like without spokesperson, such as like activists, voicing these concerns, then we wouldn't know what we collectively agree to make the change needed. Mm-hmm. As Danny had mentioned earlier, like it's quite important to have people speaking about this, otherwise we wouldn't know. So it takes a collective agreeing together for changes to happen. So for example, I wouldn't have known about activities that I could partake in order to make the changes in our environment. So I found myself volunteering with Cindy Hawes from UCC to work on restoration work regarding our local wildlife. I found great joy in taking that action and did new things I probably would never would have tried before. So mm-hmm. waist deep in a swamp is something I found myself liking.
And liked it.
I liked it. It was fun.
Wow.
And so I found great joy in taking that action to help our environment and wouldn't have known it was an issue without activists calling it out or speaking with my friends who were involved in such things already. So, of course, I encourage everyone to be involved in such matters, mm-hmm. whether that only be like having the ability to speak out about it and bring an awareness or being able to dedicate your time and volunteering to make that change. I think it's important to start making improvements now, so that we and future generations can reap the rewards of a better acceptance within our community of who we are and our diversity mm-hmm. of our individuals and our neighbors, as well as having that security and a healthy environment for the longevity so that we can all live on a nice earth that's still well and good to go.
I think that's something that, like, if anybody is struggling with, like, why would I care about this? You know, it doesn't affect me and therefore I shouldn't have to worry about it. I've got too many concerns of my own. When it comes to situations like this, our end goal, like especially if you're a parent, should be the cultivation of a healthier world for the future generations. And I think that if we had been doing this generations ago, mm-hmm. the kind of advancements we would see would be so far better than what we have. And I think that if we can get on board now and we can focus down, like, what is our why? Well, the why is creating a better world, a safer world, you know, more encouraging environment, better air, cleaner water,
to be ourselves,
to love ourselves, regardless of whether or not we're ripped or, you know, we're floofy and voluptuous. You know, we got to really establish that foundation for the future generations, not only for our comfortability, you know, as we grow older. Like when we're older, yeah, I want the world to be better. I want better food. I want cleaner food. I want to feel comfortable in my skin. I want my friends to feel comfortable in their own skin, to have healthy mindsets, to have healthy bodies, regardless of what size they are
or who they identify
or who they identify as. The goal is to first and foremost establish that for our children and then ourselves. And I want, you know, we need to model that for the younger generations, because they're going to take after what they see in us. And if they see us accepting BIPOC and LGBTQ and different body types and really learning to love that and working toward cultivating a better environment and the protection of our woodlands and waterways
and home.
And home and the protection of our wildlife, it's just going to come natural. What's hard to us will come natural to them.
Right. And it is important to remember that positive change doesn't just include environmental restoration or social change. It's both. Mm-hmm. It's a mixture. And in order to make a better world for our children, and what our predecessors should have done is see to the maintaining and promotion of fixing our environment for what damage we've already done and trying to preserve what we can before it's ruined. Mm-hmm. And along with that, we have to also make sure that it's a safe environment for fellow humans. And in order for it to be a safe environment, we have to make sure that it's an accepting environment. I'm glad mm-hmm. that you guys understand that connection and are striving to build that. So from my experience, people on all sides of the political spectrum do unify in the belief that we must protect our environment, especially our regional forests. Would you agree? And do you know any examples of that sort of thing?
Oh, yeah, I absolutely would agree. People from all walks of life can come together in bringing attention to and valuing what's important, mm-hmm. our community. And that includes both the people and the local natural environment. People with vastly different political and social perspectives all have like reason or another to want to maintain the outdoors, whether that motivation be to maintain a healthy wildlife population for hunting, keeping our waterways clean for fishing, boating, or water skiing, or just wanting a nice green park to have a picnic with when your family. I know as an artist, I definitely love our nature because I'm able to stand outside and draw and paint what I see, the beauty that's around us.
You experience what you're trying to paint.
Oh, absolutely. And so nearly everybody has some connection to nature, whether they notice it or not. The LGBTQ community and people who may not agree with them on everything can at least find some common ground in nature. And common ground is the best starting point for reconciliation and progress.
I see. And I feel that art is a similar sort of bridge. Art is enjoyed by people from all different political and social beliefs, just like nature is enjoyed by people from all different backgrounds and beliefs. So art is a similar bridge between two sides who might otherwise not agree or get along well.
Oh, absolutely. I fully agree. Art is a bridge that can be enjoyed by everyone, regardless of what side or lifestyle they have. The same as with nature. Art showcases the beauty of nature, bringing attention to details that otherwise aren't seen or encountered.
In general, it can also, I think, remind us of aspects within nature mm-hmm. that need particularly special attention. So those species that are endangered or not often seen commonly, such as paintings of endangered animals and beginning discourse surrounding research or information about them, and nonprofit events that encourages individuals to get involved. So showcasing them in our art really brings attention to them where we don't normally see them in media and such.
Yeah.
So art is an excellent way of showcasing the beauty and fragility of such creatures and presents a way of visually identifying with said animal or aspects of nature that we might not often have contact with in a residential area.
Yeah. Everybody enjoys art in one form or another. And that, I mean, that goes far beyond what we think is like traditional art. I mean, that goes into all sorts of media, video, games, movies, posters, like everything that is created and creative. It really bridges that gap between various communities and allows for the beginning of a discourse among them.
It helps us emotionally identify with aspects of life, whether it be people, environment, communities, and yourself.
Yeah.
It's great that you bring up emotional expression, because I also think that sometimes words can cause a breakdown in communication, especially two sides who may have a heated debate. But art is a great way to express feeling without having to run into those words that might create more conflict. It's a way that both sides of any conflict can express themselves. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. There is a danger, though, in regard to art and using it as a form of communication. While it's good to begin a discourse, really, if we observe art, we're observing it through our own lens, our own experiences, and our own filters. So when we look at something, a piece of art that might seem edgy or uncomfortable to us or morally wrong, morally gray, different from our personal code of conduct or who we would usually view as the hero or places we would normally pay attention to, things that invoke very strong visceral responses. We need to realize that we're looking at it through our own lens, our own perception, and our own experiences, which is why it's so important that we begin to view it as more of a passageway that we can connect to people of varying opinions. And just to realize that just because somebody else's feelings or interpretation of that piece is different from ours does not mean that they are inherently wrong. There's nuance, but we should also get to the heart of what the artist's intent was and for whom it might have been created.
I think that goes for people's baseline opinions as well. Mm-hmm. Although we may not agree with it, opinion is an opinion. And so it's good to understand where that opinion's coming from and learn more about that individual. So while, yes, we might find some opinions not to our, you know, base morality, it's good to learn about that individual and maybe even learn a thing or two as well. So being able to be open to different ideas and points of interest so that we can also adapt ourselves. So it's important to not be stagnant, as we had mentioned earlier, and to be uncomfortable, allowing ourselves to make changes and push ourselves to be more involved with things around us.
Mm-hmm. I think ultimately in all of this, it's important to just come back to the heart of, you know, this, the importance behind this, that we are community, and whether we like the person next to us or not, we are community and we're in this together. And it's our job to, you know, we might not be in, you know, deep relationship with some, but we all should have each other's backs. We live in the same area. We breathe the same air. We drink the same water. We exist together. And I think it's important that we recognize that it's time to get back to the heart of community, which is diversity and inclusion and the protection of our environment for the future generations. For sure.
It was great having you, and you had a lot of great points. And I would again just like to thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to appear and talk about these important things for the community and educate people.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
It was a for sure honor.
We look forward to seeing you at the Pride Parade.